Hello, this is the Global News Podcast from the BBC World Service with reports and analysis from across the world. The latest news 7 days a week. BBC World Service podcasts are supported by advertising.
This is the Happy Pod from the BBC World Service. I'm Vanessa Heaney, and in this edition, uploaded on Saturday the 25th of May, we meet Georgia, the singing greyhound. Who found her voice and a love of opera after being rescued. The man who nearly became the first black astronaut finally makes it into space 6 decades later.
Absolutely fantastic. Absolutely. This is a life-changing experience. Everybody needs to do this.
Meanwhile, spaceships of the future, as imagined by children, fly over New York.
It's like a straw hat with reindeer antlers.
It's a dinosaur with a jetpack.
The spaceship is like a dog, and theirs have many bones.
Also in this podcast, we meet the man who took on multi-billion-dollar mining companies to protect an Indian forest, and won.
When he first went to these forests, he found them so beautiful that he was very surprised and shocked to hear that such a beautiful forest will be destroyed for coal mining.
And listener Julia, the goat whisperer. Our first story covers an animal that makes me very happy. Dogs. I have a beloved black Labrador called Olive, who's known as the favourite child in my family. But this story is about a rather special greyhound who sings. This is 6-year-old Georgia and her take on Mozart's aria Queen of the Night, along with her big human sister, 8-year-old Hannah, on piano. Georgia was a racing dog until a serious accident on the track 3 years ago. She has now amassed a huge following on Instagram, including me. She was rescued by the Albro family in Perth in Western Australia. I caught up with Hannah and, of course, Georgia, along with mum Jess.
Georgia was extremely anxious and stressed when she first arrived at our home. It was obvious that it was the first time she'd ever been inside a house, and she really had no idea how to navigate normal things inside a home, like doors and stairs. And all of the sounds, like TVs and things like that, would just cause her to become extremely distressed. She'd just pace around the house and as if she was lost, and she just didn't know what to do with herself. And we gave her toys, but she just looked at them and didn't know what to do with them. She didn't make a sound when we first got her. She'd whimper as if she was scared, but she would never sing or bark or anything like that. We didn't even know that she could. And my daughter started learning the piano, and as soon as she started playing the piano, Georgia would just join in. And now it's just impossible for us to play a piano or have any music on in the house without Georgia joining in. It's, you know, she didn't know she had this voice, but now we just can't turn it off.
That's so lovely. I understand that Georgia is asleep at the moment, but I wondered if you might play something for us, Hannah. Hello there. Georgia, I hope you are listening, even if you're asleep. And I wondered if you might sing for us. Our listeners would love that.
Okay, off you go.
On cue, that's so lovely. Hannah, she certainly woke up and was in full voice. Does she have a favourite type of music? Or is there something she likes more than others?
Well, she loves, like, the noise of the piano, and sometimes she sings to TV shows like Mary Poppins movie.
And what do you think is her talent? Has she got an area that you think she's particularly good at?
Yeah, opera.
A lot of people might associate greyhounds with racing, but Georgia's story shows us that These dogs make wonderful companions. Could you tell us about her role in your family and in your life?
We didn't really know about the plight of greyhounds before we rescued Georgia, but we were keen to sort of understand where she'd come from, what she'd experienced, and why this beautiful three-year-old dog had been discarded. To us, she was perfect. But then what we found out was that there's a lot of horrible things go on in the greyhound racing industry. And yeah, Georgia's opened our eyes to that whole world, introduced us to so many beautiful people that are all on the same page. She's just changed our lives completely.
Hannah, I wondered if you might play us one of your favourite pieces and see if Georgia wants to join in too. Georgia, I hope you're still there.
Yeah, do you want to play another song, Hannah? Yep.
Georgia seems to be awake. She's looking at me.
Thank you so much, Hannah. What a duo. Hannah, I wondered if there was anything else you wanted to share.
Well, making music with my dog is one of my motivations to learn music, and I love that she cooperates with my piano and sings, and she's the centre of our lives. She's what keeps us going.
8-year-old Hannah Ulbro, her mum Jess and their beloved greyhound Georgia. We would really love to hear from you about your talented pets. What can they do? Please do get in touch, send us an email or a voice note. And if you'd like to see more videos of Georgia singing, she is Georgia the Grey on Instagram. Now, our next story is a case of better late than never. A man who originally trained to be an astronaut back in the 1960s has finally made it into space, becoming the oldest person ever to do so. Ed Dwight, who's 90 years old and a former Air Force pilot, was almost chosen as the first black astronaut, but didn't make the final cut. Jessica Wilkins has more.
5, 4, command engine start. 2.
America's oldest astronaut has finally taken off. 90-year-old Ed Dwight was originally a candidate for NASA's space program back in 1963. He had the support of then-President John F. Kennedy and had hoped to become America's first black astronaut. Unfortunately, NASA did not select him for the program. Last Sunday, he finally caught a ride in one of Jeff Bezos's rockets.
And here's a grand opportunity at this late date to fulfill that for self-satisfaction, yes, but more importantly, to satisfy all the wonderful people that have showered me with love for all these years.
The 10-minute trip made Mr. Dwight, a retired Air Force pilot, the oldest person ever to go into space. Now a sculptor, he is 2 months older than the previous record holder, Star Trek's William Shatner. When he was interviewed immediately after landing, Mr. Dwight sounded over the moon.
Long time coming. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Absolutely fantastic. Absolutely. Life-changing experience. Everybody needs to do this.
We're going to stay with space now. Have you ever wondered about the future of space travel? Well, some children around the world have been drawing what they think the spaceships they might travel in will look like. Thousands sent in their designs and a few lucky winners had them turned into drones by Lego designers, and they blasted off into the skies of New York for a display of what the organisers called unidentified playing objects. I spoke to 7-year-old Gillian from the US, 13-year-old Jace from Hong Kong and 10-year-old Sebastian from Denmark, who told me about their designs.
It's like a straw hat with reindeer antlers and a rocket underneath the straw hat with some reindeer ears. The straw hat is like because I love summer and so, like it's a good hat, and like the antlers is like reindeers. I love Christmas and like they can fly. And the giant rocket, how else can they fly around?
I'm now going to say hello to Jillian.
It's a dinosaur with a jetpack flying to a dinosaur moon. There's a bunch of dinosaurs waiting for him to arrive on the moon from dinosaurs. So why chose that? Because I like dinosaurs and all of that, and I like really going fast.
Hi, Jace.
Hello.
Could you tell us about your design, please, Jace?
I designed the spaceship as like a dog, and stairs have many bones. It's surrounding my spaceship. It's like a little bit of pink. I want to try and design more other kind of spaceship and also others of like transportation, and I really want to try to design other things else.
How did it make you feel when you saw your design up in the sky in as a drone?
Yes, I'm really feeling so exciting, and I feel it really amazing because I never thought about it would be my design in the space, and I'm really happy of it.
It was like really amazing. I felt really, really good, and it was really pretty. I think I would never forget it.
It was pretty cool and amazing, like the actions and the movements.
And would you go on the moon in the dinosaur? Would you like to go there too?
Yeah. It'll be, we can see a lot of stars and a lot of planets.
And would there be people living on them, do you think, or would it just be dinosaurs?
I think dinosaurs.
And do you think that you might go to space one day when you're older? Are you interested in maybe going to space, being an astronaut?
Yeah. There's going to be a dinosaur on it with a tail.
I think it could be fun to travel out to another universe, see if there's life.
I really want to go to space because I think space is a really amazing place, and I think it will be super beautiful.
Jillian, Jace and Sebastian talking about their drone designs for Lego. We've been asking for your stories of meeting people you know in unexpected places, and lots of you have been in touch, including Leo.
I relocated from the UK to mainland Europe 5-6 years back. I went back to the UK in January because I still had things in storage there with a friend. Train arrived in London, caught a connection to Maidenhead where my friend was. After 2 nights, I was coming back, standing at Maidenhead Station. We'd just arrived on the platform, and someone said, "Hey, Leo." And I turned around to see none other than Alexander Martinelli. Martinellis were family friends from Zimbabwe back in the 90s. That's where we both spent a large part of our childhood. Yeah, we spent some memorable times together and attended the same church and even had a holiday together. And, you know, we're chatting about these things and I said, you know, you wouldn't believe it, but I've got an album in my day pack on my back. And I said, listen, there's some pictures in there of us. And lo and behold, there were pictures of us on holiday in Cape Town. 6, 7, 8 pictures, you know, of the two families, of us, brothers, them, the sisters, all posing together in Cape Town, on the beach, in a holiday cottage. Yeah, it was great. It was really one of those chance meetings. You just wonder, was it meant to be? I think so.
Now, if you have a story of a chance meeting, please do send us an email or a voice note. The address, as ever, is globalpodcast@bbc.co.uk. And thanks very much to those who have already sent theirs in. We're planning to run them in the next coming weeks. Coming up in this podcast...
He's usually hyper and just like any toddler. But when you see him painting, he's so focused. He looks like an elderly artist that has been doing this for years.
Ghana's art prodigy, who is just 17 months old. Now to the story about a man who took on the coal industry to save a forest and won. Alok Shukla fell in love with the Hastio Arunya forest in central India, home to thousands of tribes people, endangered animals and rare plants. So much so, he dedicated his life to stopping multi-billion dollar companies uprooting the trees in their search for coal. 12 years later, after online campaigns, protests in the capital and tree sit-ins, he has saved a huge area of the forest, known as the Lungs of Chhattisgarh, and been awarded the Goldman Environmental Prize, also known as the Green Nobel Prize. I spoke to Alok with the help of his friend and interpreter, Priyanshu Gupta, and asked why the forest is so special.
Thank you so much for the opportunity to convey the thoughts and feelings. When he first went to these forests, he found them so beautiful, so rich, that he was very surprised and shocked to hear that such a beautiful natural sal forest will be destroyed for coal mining. And it is then that he felt, what is the point of all the talks about mitigating climate change if we do not preserve forests like Hazebaran?
The forest is not just special to you. Tell us about all the people and the animals and the communities that live there.
The richest forests in India are precisely where tribal population has been living. So in many ways, these forests exist because of these tribals. In turn, the tribal or Adivasis, as we call them in India, they depend completely on these forests for their livelihood, but also for their cultural identity, their festival. Close to 25 endangered wildlife species of mammals, thousands of birds and other flora and fauna survive in Hazebaran forest. And most important, this is the elephant habitat where a significant elephant population thrives.
Did you ever think that you would have to give up? How did you keep going?
What he said is that, firstly, it is important to recognize that it's been a long struggle, and the struggle has not really ended. It is still ongoing. But the question you raise is very important. How did we keep hope and optimism? Definitely, it's been a big challenge. So for Alok, the hope comes from when he goes and meets people, the Adivasi community, who are living in these forests, and they are determined to save their forest at every cost. This message from the local Adivasi that gives me hope to continue fighting.
So it's a huge achievement. You've managed to save a lot of forest and you've brought together so many people as well as the people who live in the communities in the forest to do this. This must be an amazing feeling.
Obviously, it is a very happy moment that one has been recognized globally. When I started on this journey, it never ever occurred to me that I will ever be standing on an international platform. So definitely, it is a very, very happy moment. It is a big success. But more importantly, it is actually the success for the people of Hazef, because finally, the voice of the local Adivasis has now reached an international platform, and it is able to attract, in some sense, a global solidarity. I also feel a lot of responsibility. We have won this award, but how do we use it to further the struggles? Yes, we all need development, but development at what cost? Especially in this era of climate change, how can I now play my responsibility of lending support to that cause as well? So in some sense, I feel both happy as well as burdened with a sense of responsibility.
Alok Shukla and his interpreter Priyanshu Gupta. Time for a few other stories we've spotted this week. That's the sound of Diogo Elias becoming South America's first ever squash world champion. The 27-year-old claimed victory over the former world number one, Mustafa Assel, in the men's final. Speaking at the tournament in Cairo, Elias said it was going to be a big deal for his fans in Peru.
I just can't believe it, to be honest. I still don't know how it's gonna be. I think it's gonna be huge. It's gonna be massive in Peru. All the people that's been following me for so many years, and yeah, to be honest, I don't even know how I feel right now. I haven't processed it yet, and just very happy.
A man who was renovating his wine cellar in Austria has made an extraordinary discovery. Not a bottle of vintage red or white, but the remains of at least three prehistoric mammoths. Andreas Pernestorfer made the find whilst renovating his cellar. He told the Austrian Broadcasting Corporation, ORF, that at first he thought it was just a piece of wood left by his grandfather. But then he remembered that in the past his grandfather had found teeth, and he thought it might be a mammoth. Archaeologists estimate the bones are between 30,000 and 40,000 years old. The French Post Office has rolled out a scratch-and-sniff postage stamp to celebrate the world-famous baguette. The stamp, which costs just over $2, shows the distinctive loaf of bread, decorated with a blue, white and red ribbon. The ink used on the stamps contains microcapsules, which provide the bakery fragrance when scratched. Stamp collectors need to act quickly, though, as there's a limited print run. Now, in the art world, many artists wait years for some sort of recognition of their talent. In the case of Vincent van Gogh, fame didn't come until after his death. But for one Ghanaian artist, it's all come a little bit sooner than expected, as Rebecca Wood reports.
How to walk, how to talk, how to eat real food. Just some of the skills that a typical 1.5-year-old might be attempting to master. But not Aitliam Nanasam Ankra from Ghana. Aged just 1 year and 152 days old, he's entered the Guinness World Records as the world's youngest male painter.
His paintings are usually vibrant, extremely abstract. From the age of 11 months, he's good at complementing the colors he chooses, in the sense that if he chooses green, he knows it matches pink, and he knows which shade of pink it matches with.
That's his mother, Chantal Kuka Egan. An artist too, she needed to find a way to keep Aitliam busy while she worked. So, at just 6 months old, she got him rolling around on canvas with some paint, and it's then she realised his potential talent.
At that stage, he couldn't even hold a brush. He would try and grab the colour and squeeze it in between his fingers and then spread it out. And then at the end, when it dried, I raised the canvas and it had turned into something beautiful. So I was like, okay, this could be part of his playtime then.
But playtime soon turned into professional pieces. In order to qualify for the record, Aitliam needed to be part of a public exhibition and sell his work. So, a few months ago, his work was exhibited at the Museum of Science and Technology in the capital, Accra. Not only that, but he sold 9 out of 10 works on display and was even commissioned to make a piece by the First Lady of Ghana. So, how was he handling it all at such a young age?
He's usually hyper, and just like any toddler, hyper, they're just exploring the world. But when you see him painting, he's so focused. He looks like an elderly artist that has been doing this for years. I'm pretty sure he's aware now, because there was one time I told him he was the Guinness World Record holder, and his reaction alone, he was sitting in the back seat and he was just singing, Guinness, Guinness, Guinness.
Chantal's hope is the record will help raise the profile of art in her country. As for Aitliam, her dream is an international scholarship to continue to grow his artistic talent. But in the meantime, he can be found in his own studio, surrounded by bright pinks and greens and yellows, ready to create his next masterpiece.
Watch this space. That was Rebecca Wood reporting. Now, we started with an animal singing like a human, so we thought we'd end with humans sounding like animals. Over the past few weeks, we've heard from a 9-year-old boy who sounds like a seagull and a 5-year-old girl who does a great impression of a lion. So, of course, we asked you for your animal noises.
Hi, my name is Julia Lawrence. I'm from Stamford, California in the United States, and I've been told I can do a pretty good goat noise.
Brilliant. That clip made the Happy Pod team really laugh, but it also left us with many questions. So we asked Julia to tell us more, including how she first learnt she could sound like a goat.
I have many fond memories of my mother taking me to the Woodland Park Zoo as a child, and one in particular stands out, which is I was waiting for her to use the restroom in the farm section. I must have been 7 or 8 at the time, and while I was idling by the goats, I decided to try to imitate their noise, their bleating. I remember showing my mom when she came outside, and she was quite amused when they called back, and the peculiar ability, I wouldn't call it a talent, has been following me ever since. My boyfriend was surprised to realize I could make this unpleasant noise when we were hiking in Italy back in 2017 on Elba Island. We're going up from Porto Azzurro to the Madonna di Monserrato Sanctuary, and we happened upon a small herd. I let out my bleat, and they paused, called back, and started walking toward us. And to my relief, my boyfriend was more amused than horrified. And we're still together some 6 years later, so he can't have minded that much. But just this past fall, we stopped off in Kos, a Greek island, after a wedding in Turkey, and once again came upon a group of goats, this time crossing the road in front of our rental car. And he egged me on to let out my goat sound, and they once again paused and called back. The most recent use of my bleat, though, has been as a goat stand-in at a friend's Passover Seder dinner. I'm a law student, and for the past 3 years, a group of friends has kindly included me in their annual tradition of singing Chad Gadya, in which they assign students roles. And let's just say I'm glad to have been assigned the goat and not the butcher.
Fabulous. Thanks so much, Julia. Well, if you think you or your children can do better, please do send us a recording. And that's all from us now. Remember, if you'd like to be part of the Happy Pod, we'd also love to hear any stories you think will make us smile. As ever, the address is globalpodcast@bbc.co.uk. This edition was mixed by Callum McLean. The producers were Holly Gibbs and Rachel Bulkley. The editor is Karen Martin, and I'm Vanessa Heaney. Until next time, goodbye.